Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. The state's response to the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic has presented a new set of challenges for Pennsylvania State Police. Like, what does stay at home actually mean? When can someone be cited for not staying at home? Will police respond in person to all calls, and particular attention to incidents of Asian Americans being targeted or blamed for spreading the illness? To answer many of these questions today, we're joined on the program by Pennsylvania State Police Major Christopher Parris, Acting Deputy Commissioner of Administration and Professional Responsibility. Major Parris, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you for having us.
If you have a question or a comment, I know there are a lot of questions. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Major Parris, the broad question, how are the duties of the Pennsylvania State Police different during this coronavirus pandemic?
We're attempting to maintain social distance while simultaneously delivering those police services that we're duty-bound to provide to those living here in the Commonwealth and traveling through it. So from a practical standpoint, we've attempted to put some mechanisms in place, for example, signs in both English and Spanish, for people who would come to one of our installations for service, that we are trying to get them to, if they are symptomatic or feeling unwell, to call in from an outside number so that we don't worry about a contamination inside of the building or greater community spread, so we can find out specifically what their call for service might be and deliver those services by potentially taking the conversation outside of the building. Obviously, if it's an emergency call for service, a crash or a major case investigation or a crime against a person, that would still require a normal response. So we're trying to strike the balance of being in a supportive role to whatever we can provide to the Department of Health while at the same time delivering the services that we're expected to.
Just out of curiosity, have any troopers across the state tested positive for COVID-19?
Yes. As of yesterday, I believe we've had four troopers who've tested positive. Thankfully, they're all doing well. They're feeling unwell, but they're not in an acute phase of the virus. So we're monitoring that very closely, and we're monitoring the contact with our people out in the general public, because we don't want to be a vector for transferring the virus while we're out there doing the duties that we're expected to perform.
Are troopers wearing masks, face masks?
Masks have been ordered, and they're at various points in the supply chain. We have received initial shipments, and we're currently working on creating a policy moving forward consistent with the Department of Health and the CDC guidelines, so that, again, the mask that you wear protects others from you should you be asymptomatic but transmitting the virus, and the mask that you wear protects everybody else. So we're working and moving on that front, and our hope is that we should have some policy guidance and some masks to issue in short order.
Those four that you mentioned, are any of them being treated in a hospital, or are they quarantined, or are they staying at home?
They're quarantined at home. Thankfully, none of them have been hospitalized.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. Let's hope that everything goes well there. So let's go into the stay-at-home order. This seems to be where we're getting most of the questions, and there is some confusion. When is it permissible to travel outside the home under the governor's order?
The governor has been very clear, saying that, you know, we are expecting people to exercise guidance that if it's a life-sustaining decision that you're making, you need food, you need medicine, you need to care for someone, and you leave your home, that's perfectly acceptable. And we're really a mechanism to educate people, and we're a mechanism to facilitate voluntary compliance. You know, we're not out there pulling people over or initiating contacts with the public because we believe that they are out in violation of the order. The vast majority of people, we believe, are complying. We know this is a very challenging time. Our troopers are people, too. You know, we certainly don't want people to feel like that we're an added stressor out there. You know, we're there to protect people and to help people voluntarily comply and educate them.
Well, you said that it's clear from the governor's order, and I think some things are clear, but just from the questions that many people are asking, I don't know whether it's clear to everyone. So I'm going to give you some examples here in a few minutes, but first let's take a phone call. Jim is in Lebanon. Jim, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Scott, and I appreciate your guests taking the time to come on and talk to people. I think that's very good of him. And my question is, he partially just answered that, but my question is, do the police, whether local or state, have the authority to just randomly pull cars over if they are not otherwise violating any traffic laws to inquire where they're going or why? I'm especially thinking this coming Sunday being Easter Sunday, maybe a lot of people are going to try to go visit friends or relatives for dinner, which may not be considered legitimate under the governor's rules. And are people going to be stopped like that? And if so, what about due process of law where somebody may be pulled over and they could say, well, you singled me out, but I wasn't violating any traffic law, but the guy in front of me was speeding and he didn't get pulled over, and the guy behind me was tailgating and he didn't get stopped. So I'd just like some clarification on those things, please. Thank you.
Jim, thank you very much for your call. He actually has several questions there. Major, what about that?
Jim, I'll take your call, hopefully in sequential order. If I miss something along the way, please interject. First and foremost, we are not pulling cars over if there is not probable cause / reasonable suspicion for the stop. So we are not out there pulling people over as a result of the fact that we suspect that they may be out in violation of the stay-at-home order. In terms of the religious season that you brought up, certainly, the right to express your religion is sacred to all of us in this trying time. People, utilizing and practicing their faith, should they choose to do so, is obviously essential to people. The only thing that we would ask is that the pastors and people who are organizing their services seek alternative means so that they can avoid in-person religious services. But we are not going to pull people over for our belief that they're out in violation of the order. And again, this is about maintaining social distance. This is about stopping the spread of the virus. This is about supporting one another in a time of crisis. And to finish your question, we have, in a small number of cases, so far I believe we've issued two citations, but there will be full due process through the normal channels where somebody, if they feel that they want to take a hearing and exercise their rights, that they are fully in place.
So just to clarify and summarize, and what I compare this to is Pennsylvania seatbelt law, where there had to be another violation, at least when the law was first enacted, had to be another violation for a person to be pulled over if they were not wearing their seatbelt. Is that a good analogy?
I would say yes. They're not going to be pulled over because we suspect that they're out in violation of the order, correct?
Okay. Something just came into my mind when you were talking about churches and religious services this weekend. I know that there have been several churches in other states that have been cited against their governor's orders for public gatherings. Is that, under this order of the governor, is that illegal? Is there the possibility that a pastor or a rabbi could be cited?
Well, we will not be citing anybody for the practice of their religion. But again, we're strongly, strongly encouraging pastors, rabbis, priests, ministers, please, it's not about the suppression of anybody's religious rights. It's about keeping your congregations safe.
Mm. So I want to get back to some specific examples and questions that we have actually had, Major, from some listeners. the case that got so much attention was the young woman in York County, 19, who was cited for, she said, just going out for a drive. I understand that she was pulled over for a traffic violation. So going, just saying to a trooper or a local police officer that you're just out for a drive, that goes against the governor's order?
Well, I wouldn't want to comment directly to that specific case because
that's ongoing.
But I would say that if you have a valid reason to go out, and troopers will exercise discretion, and it's about educating. Our primary focus has been about educating people and about telling people to stay home. Is there a possibility, in extreme cases, out of the entire 12.8 million Pennsylvanians that live here, and I don't know how many countless more that are visiting here, two citations so far have been issued. So I understand that it involves people's rights. I understand that people are concerned about what the freedom or the infringement of the freedom of their movement might be. But again, we're just asking people to social distance and stay at home unless they absolutely have to go out.
We've been told to feel free to go outside while maintaining social distancing. One of the questions that arose many times in our program yesterday it had to do with walking on trails, hiking. But many people would have to drive to get to those trails and park at the trailhead. I myself and family went out to a trail where we drove 3 miles to get to the trail on Sunday. Is that legal? Is it legal to drive to get to a trail? And of course, if you have to maintain social distancing while you're on the trail, but is that legal?
We want people to go out and exercise. We would just say to exercise the best judgment possible and utilize a place that's as close to home as possible. A neighborhood walk, if permissible, would probably be better than driving to a location some distance away. But again, we want people to, if everybody is their brother and their sister's keeper, thinking, what I'm about to do next, is it going to help us stem the community spread and flatten the curve of this virus? That should be the analysis for all of us when we're contemplating whatever the next move we're about to make is.
Major, I guess this is where some of the confusion arises because, as you said, a lot of this is up to the discretion of the law enforcement officer, whether it be a state police or local police officer. It doesn't seem to be cut and dried in that area. We have heard from the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, for example, to get out and to walk on trails, go to parks that are open, that kind of thing. But, if we get pulled over by a police officer who you say, I'm going to a trail to hike, if that police officer is using his or her discretion, his or her discretion may be different than another officer. You understand what I'm saying?
I do understand what you're saying, and you're asking me to quantify and clarify, every single future hypothetical situation that might arise. And that's a difficult thing for me to do. All I can tell you is the leadership of the Pennsylvania State Police has reached out through our partners, municipal partners, through the Pennsylvania Chiefs of Police Association. And I can tell you from the leadership perspective that our initiative has been one of education and one of voluntary compliance. We certainly don't want to stress people to a point in this crisis that they feel they can't reduce stress by, as you gave the example, spending quality time together as a family. I would say on a personal level, I've seen more of my neighbors in the last several weeks than I have in the prior 8 years that I've lived in our home. We want people to, again, do those things that keep us healthy, do those things that keep us safe, and do those things that keep us calm. And again, I can't give you every single eventuality. I keep going back to the fact that exercise good judgment, and we're out there to educate and get people to voluntarily comply.
When you were talking, Major, earlier about social distancing, and obviously you want your troopers to be safe as well. Any qualms about have any of your any troopers across the state expressed any qualms about maybe approaching a vehicle where they may be asking for a license, registration, where they actually have to touch it? I mean, that would seem to be a situation where social distancing is a little bit more of a challenge.
Sure. We've actually tried to put several protocols in place whereby if someone could exhibit a license or a registration or insurance card, the trooper can write the information down and then go back to the vehicle and run it. We're trying to maintain social distance in terms of when we're speaking to people and maintaining that so that the transmission would hopefully be curbed. Our statistics are down in terms of the citations that we're actually out there issuing. You know, we're down about 15,000 citations over a similar period in 2019, and that tells us that we're out there to maintain safety. We don't want people driving recklessly or carelessly, but by the same token, we're really focusing on prioritizing those contacts with the public. We're trying to be visible. We feel that we're a cause for calm, and we're a projection of calm, that we're here if you need us. Certainly, back to your initial question, there are certain instances of our duties that cause us to be in very close contact, and that would be, domestic violence, that would be assault, that would be, violent crime, that we're there to protect people, and we want people to know that we're there and we're fully prepared to do our duty as we would, the situation notwithstanding.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our coronavirus COVID-19 coverage continues on Smart Talk today. Our guest is Pennsylvania State Police Major Christopher Paris, Acting Deputy Commissioner of Administration and Professional Responsibility. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Major, we're getting a lot of phone calls and emails, so I'll get to as many as I can here. James is in Lebanon. James, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, Scott. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing very well.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. My question is, there's a lot of homeless people in this country, and a lot of them have taken to living in their vehicles. I am one of them. I'm what they refer to as a van dweller or a nomad. And I was wondering if there are some kind of fines or penalties, prosecution that would take place if I was to go to a state park and set up a camp. I'm in the city right now, and I don't like being here.
Major?
You know what, sir? I don't feel qualified to answer that from the standpoint that I don't want to speak for the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. I would tell you that it's obviously a trying time for all of us, and I would tell you to try and maintain, lawful presence wherever you are. But again, social distancing should be the number one priority.
I'll tell you what, James, we're going to try to get an answer for you. Stay on the line, if you will, and we'll get your phone number and try to get an answer for you on that, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right.
I'd also make a recommendation, too. You mentioned that you're in Lebanon County. If there are county resources or state resources within Lebanon County of which you can avail yourself, we certainly will facilitate whatever information we can to get you the help that you need.
All right. Thank you again, James, for your call, and I hope I have him on hold here. I hope I didn't lose him then. But let's go to Ron in Cumberland County. Ron, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
So with the governor opening the official trout season, how is that kind of compatible with stay at home and don't travel for, just emergency reasons, life-sustaining reasons? I personally didn't see trout fishing as life-sustaining. And does that put pressure on the state police to then sort of have to get involved in the way people think about what is life-sustaining in these situations? And I'll take my answer offline, that's fine.
All right, Ron, thank you very much for your call.
We're currently in communication, actually, as recently as this morning with the Game Commission and the Fish Commission, discussing what the upcoming start of trout season might look like. And again, that's something that we're assessing as we move forward. Certainly, it could be done in a social distancing type way, but at the same time, there are other considerations which are currently being considered as we formulate a policy moving forward. Again, our
concern is educating people about social distancing.
Major, I think our last two calls are a good example of how there are so many situations that we've never dealt with before that they kind of come up, and I don't know whether they've been anticipated or not. You agree?
I do agree. I think this is a situation that is unprecedented. And again, we're trying to assess these issues as they arise, but also by the same token, maintain the values and the rights that we hold dear. For example, you know, we've had our Heritage Affairs people out to make sure that people who might blame this on a certain group or a certain number of groups, we want to make sure that we're available to those populations as well, to make sure that they know that we're here if they face a cultural or a lingual barrier to coming forward if someone is in fact intimidating them or attributing any of this to them. And thankfully, we haven't had any documented cases, but that doesn't mean that we're not looking or we're not trying to facilitate that information, because as we move forward, certainly the issues of how we're going to handle trout season are important, but the preservation of rights and the preservation of people not being victimized in our society is also very important.
I just wanted to clarify what you just said. So we have not had any incidents here in Pennsylvania that where Asian Americans, for example, have been targeted?
None that the state police has investigated, so I want to make sure I put a qualifier on that. But we've recently pushed out information, and we've reached out to our partners at the Anti-Defamation League and the ACLU to make sure, along with our federal, county, and municipal partners, to say that we're actively looking and monitoring for people that would want to perpetrate a crime against a minority group at this time or attribute the situation to them. And we want to make sure that they feel comfortable coming forward and letting us know about any situation that's out there that's warranting an investigation.
I received a release last week that said, and I'll use the words in the release, that Pennsylvania State Police have refined guidelines to when state police will respond to certain non-emergency incidents. What are the changes, and which non-emergency incidents are you talking about?
I would give some examples like lost and found items, perhaps littering, a situation of identity theft, where we can get as much of the information as we can over the phone and then follow up with it. General request to speak to a trooper. We pride ourselves on a model of service where if you want to see a trooper, we send a trooper, and we at least have a sea officer contact to try and ascertain face-to-face what the situation is. But we want to assure people that there's supervisory oversight, and we're very closely monitoring the way that we respond to incidents, so that if the victim of a violent crime or a crime against the person, that will certainly garner, or crimes in progress, for example, that will certainly garner an immediate response without any hesitation.
I saw a story yesterday that incidents of domestic violence are up across the country. Have we seen that here in Pennsylvania, where the state police have investigated?
I think the specificity relating to domestic violence, those numbers aren't really in yet. I know that our crime offenses are down, and I know that our property crimes are down, and our crashes are down. So, if you're looking at those indicators in terms of what we're trying to achieve, which is, again, people staying at home and not transmitting the disease, I think you can draw a logical correlation that's successful. Certainly, anytime you have stress, anytime you have people living or out of their routine in close proximity, that may be a concern. But again, we're always out there advocating against domestic violence. We're concerned about the cycle of codependency. We're concerned about getting those resources to victims of domestic violence. And most importantly, we're concerned that when we're called, we're going to respond immediately. So I can't say that we've specifically seen a spike. I think a lot of it is kind of a projected, intuitive analysis at this point. But certainly we're monitoring it very closely, and we can be counted upon to respond to domestic violence.
I would think that DUIs are also down. Again, I don't know whether you have the figures for that, but with people stay at home, bars not open, that kind of thing, that DUIs probably are down as well.
Correct. Our DUIs, I can see here, are down about 70%, give or take, which is, from a public health standpoint, that's one of our primary things that we feel we can have an impact on the lives of Pennsylvanians by reducing people that are driving under the influence, and that those are real lives that are saved if at the very least the driver who is impaired, and we want to take them off the roadway before they kill themselves or other people. So we believe that that is, again, another indicator that people are, in fact, staying home.
Nikki emails us, says, I've noticed in the Lancaster newspaper lately several incidents of people being charged with other offenses and the additional charges of not remaining at home. So, for example, they were charged with disturbing the peace, an open alcohol container, and with not being in their home. I think I know the case that she's referring to, that there was a couple from out of Pennsylvania who were on a sidewalk and were told to move along and face charges. At what point do you expect police to charge only for not remaining at home? Is it when symptoms are exhibited by a certain percentage of Pennsylvania residents?
I would just say I can't speak to that incident specifically. I assume it occurred in Lancaster City, but I'm not sure.
It did.
Again, people, if they're abiding by the law and they're going out only when they absolutely have to and they're practicing social distancing, that's the best advice that we would give in terms of voluntarily complying and helping everybody through this crisis. In terms of, again, they're asking for a specific future hypothetical that hasn't happened yet, I would say in all of these cases, they seem to be the statistical extreme outlier. Again, our goal is voluntary compliance and education.
Carolyn, they ask, are Easter potlucks in the driveway with neighbors acceptable if all participants are observing social distancing?
Again, I would say exercise good judgment. You know, you certainly don't want to be out around more people than you absolutely have to be. But by the same token, we know that this is a sacred week for multiple faiths, and we know that that sense of community that we all feel is lacking as we practice this social distancing is a factor. So again, for religious services, you know, no one will be cited, but we would like people to exercise, you know, good judgment.
Joyce emails us, my inspection expired at the end of March, and I do not want to interact at a garage at this point in time. Is that something the police would stop you for? I only use the car to grocery shop, and what about expired licenses?
Technically, you know, the life-sustaining delineation applies to mechanics. I understand completely the fact that she is reluctant to go and interact with anybody, and my advice to her would be that, you know, if she has to absolutely go somewhere, obviously we're not going to say that, you know, stay at home and don't get your medicine, don't get your food. By the same token, a piece of advice I might give would be to reach out to a garage and, you know, make contact with somebody and actually document that my car is expired. And as soon as we're past this difficult time, I have a future but yet undetermined appointment to go in and get my car inspected, and I would carry that with me, or the name of that person and the phone number with me, in the extreme unlikely event that they were pulled over.
You touched on this a little bit earlier, but someone has asked, when a trooper pulls a car over, are they maintaining that 6 feet of social distancing?
Yes, we believe that tactically, I mean, an unknown risk car stop, which is every single one that we undertake, unless we know that we're pulling over and conducting a felony car stop, you know, we're always trying to mitigate risk. That's what we do. We want to make sure that social distance is practiced. Now, again, we're talking about, you know, DUI. We're talking about crimes in progress. If someone has to be arrested, we feel confident that we're going to be able to facilitate that arrest and do what we have to do. But by the same token, we're very concerned with the health and welfare of our members, and we're certainly monitoring people who tell us. And if people tell us that they are symptomatic and they are sick, that's definitely a consideration for us.
DUI stop, does someone suspected have to breathe into something?
Normally, yes, I would say at this point, though, social distancing for the portable breath tests, which are not admissible in court for DUI, we probably would refrain from using one of those. But standardized field sobriety could still be administered while practicing social distancing.
Mike from York says he has a friend who is in construction. His friend also has an emergency license to help people. Is he still allowed out there?
I'm unfamiliar with an emergency license and what that would what that would refer to.
Yeah, he doesn't really say. Mike also asked if going to outdoor Easter sunrise services are okay.
Again, we would strongly recommend religious leaders find alternative means with which they can interact with their respective congregations.
Let's go to Heath in York County. Heath, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Hey, just a real quick shout-out to all our truck-driving and motorcyclist friends that have such a hard time entering down on 83 at the Fairview area of Limekiln, Fishing Creek, and Lewisberry Road, and the Turnpike that all congregate in that area. Please, everyone, stay to the left and let these slow-moving vehicles enter the road properly. That's
all right.
Not really a question,
okay.
I guess.
Thank you very much for your call. Sounds like Heath is providing some advice there that maybe a lot of other people and troopers would agree with.
Heath, anytime you can be a conscientious driver, we certainly would support that. So thank you for the sentiments.
Okay, let's go to, I got so many calls here, Major, that, my mechanic, Jim says, my mechanic told me that the March inspection has been extended to at least April 30th. I think I've heard that as well.
You know, specifically, I've seen so much information. I'll get clarification for you after this. But again, as I said, if you have to get your car fixed, by all means, do so. And again, we're not looking to make citations for expired inspections during a worldwide pandemic.
Let's see. Other questions that have come in. Well, we're getting a lot of them. We've had some people who are suggesting changes in law, like lowering speed limits, and someone who wanted to know why golf courses aren't open. That's not something that you could answer, but maybe I could answer it this way. If someone decided to go out on the golf course and play a round of golf, could they be cited?
I would defer to the policy promulgated by the governor to say that social distancing is paramount, and if you don't need to be out, if you don't need to do the next thing that you're about to do because it's life-sustaining, then be a good citizen, be a good fellow citizen, and stay at home.
Well, that summarizes it pretty well, but I'll ask the question anyway, Major. We're almost out of time. I want to thank you very much for being on the program. Advice going forward during this emergency, which we don't now know how long it will last, but from the Pennsylvania State Police, what advice would you give our listeners?
I would say to stay calm. I would say to exercise good judgment. I would tell you that the state police is going to be there along with all of our other partners in state and federal and local government. We work for you. We're concerned about the safety of you, and we're concerned about the safety of your family. If you need something that we have to provide, we will be there. And we want to just make sure that we keep perspective here, that we know that these are trying times. They're trying times on families. They're trying times as a society, but we're not going to lose sight of what's important.
And I want to thank our guest today, Pennsylvania State Police Major Christopher Parris. He's Acting Deputy Commissioner of Administration and Professional Responsibility. Major Parris, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us, Scott. Thank you.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. 2020 would have been noteworthy for several reasons before the historic COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic struck. It's a presidential election year, but it is also a year at the beginning of the decade when Americans are counted as part of the U.S. Census. Are Americans and Pennsylvanians still paying attention to the census, with so much attention focused on staying healthy, staying at home, and jobs that have been lost? An inaccurate count would have a severe consequence on the country. The data from the census is used to allocate $1.5 trillion in federal funds and determines where governments build hospitals, roads,
roads, public transportation, and other infrastructure. It's also used to draw political district lines in place for the next decade and determine how many representatives in the U.S. House each state gets by the 31st of December. Joining us now is Norman Bristol Colon, Executive Director of the Governor's Census 2020 Complete Count Commission. Mr. Colon, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Scott. I hope that you are staying home and staying safe.
Well, other than coming to work, I'm trying to stay safe. If you have a question about the census, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So how has the COVID-19 coronavirus emergency impacted the census here in Pennsylvania?
Well, I think that it has impacted not only the state, but the entire nation and the territories, and especially because of the social distancing. By now, the U.S. Census Bureau was expecting to have enumerators in different communities across the state, and that is not the case, as they have to suspend any field operations until at least April 15th. So the count has been impacted. However, I am happy to say that even when at the national level, as of today, the response rate has been 45.1% of the nation. In Pennsylvania, we are a little bit ahead of the national average or the national response rate, and we are 46.5% response rate in Pennsylvania. Unfortunately, we are not at the 50% yet, where we should be by now. But based on the pandemic, I think that we are facing some challenges.
So do you know how that compares with previous censuses at this time, say 2010 or 2000?
Yeah, well, based on 2010 and 2000, especially because last week was National Census Day, and Pennsylvania National Census Day in the previous census, we were beyond and above the 50% line, and we are not there yet this year.
Okay. So you talked about field operations, and I assume that also means outreach that have been suspended. Describe what has changed as far as field operations go and why the need, why you have to do that to follow up for those who have maybe not completed the census questionnaire online.
Well, the field operations, they have direct contact with the general public, and everybody involved with the census, they are following the CDC recommendations, the governor recommendations, and Secretary Levine recommendations. So there is not going to be any contact with anyone in Pennsylvania as long as we have the public health crisis that we are facing. So now we are doing whatever is possible through social media and through other partners that can get that can reach the population in Pennsylvania through programs like yours, through radio, Facebook, the different media outlets that we have, TV stations and newspapers. That's where we are right now. Even when I have been saying in previous months that the top priority for the state in the first 5 months of 2020 was going to be census, unfortunately, we have to take a back seat and make sure that we are saving lives, that we are protecting every single Pennsylvanian because of this pandemic. And by doing so, we are also reminded that after the pandemic, census really will decide the Pennsylvania that we will enjoy for the next 10 years.
I'm curious, Norman, whether the advertising has stopped and you're waiting till after the stay-at-home orders have been rescinded, does this mean that you continue to, you just described how you are continuing to inform people, but I'm just curious whether you've pulled back somewhat until afterwards and will really go full guns a-blazing at that time.
Well, we are doing both. First, this is a even when we have a global pandemic, Americans, we are used to face challenges of this nature. We must continue life with some adjustments, and the census is vital. It is constitutionally mandated, and we want to be in full compliance with the U.S. Constitution. So we are counting. We are counting individuals, or individuals are responding, online and by phone or by mail. So defenseless operations still continue in full force, but not the social and the personal contact that we were hoping to have with communities across the state. We have over 80 partners that are working with us across the state of Pennsylvania, making sure that they are reaching out to different communities, once again through the social media outlets, reminding individuals that they need to respond. But nothing, we are not holding meetings and groups that we were expecting to have by now, census town halls or census training. We're not holding any of that. So we are using the power of social media right now.
Are Americans paying attention to the census?
I think that we all, as Pennsylvanians and as Americans, our top priority right now is how can we really survive this pandemic. And on the other side of government, we are really making sure how can we save lives every day, every hour, every minute. So that is the top priority. However, I can tell you this. We have some counties in Pennsylvania, rural counties and urban counties, that they have a great response rate so far. In rural Pennsylvania, we have Snyder, Butler, and Adams County, that they are above the 50% response rate. And then in urban Pennsylvania, we have Chester, Montgomery, and Bucks County that are above the 50%. So there are communities that are really, facing the challenge, even in Montgomery County and Chester and Bucks, that are the counties where we have seen some of the largest growth of positive cases of the pandemic. We are seeing the response rate in those areas, higher than 50%, and they are the top counties in the Commonwealth. Because everyone, I think, understands that even when we are facing this pandemic and with the multi-billion dollar investment that the federal government with the stimulus package is going to be investing in the states and the territories, they all know that in making those decisions, the U.S. Congress and the President of the United States and the negotiations between Congress and the White House, they look at census data, and that's how some of that money will be allocated in the different communities in the different states across the nation.
What about by municipality? I saw a story last week in LNP in Lancaster that Earl Township in Lancaster County had the highest rate of return so far at 62%. Is that still the case?
That is still the case, and we are monitoring a lot of the rural counties and rural communities and the urban counties and urban communities. And I can tell you right now that we are doing, once again, in rural PA, we are doing great in Snyder, Butler, and Adams. But then when you go to Pike County, and there is a 22.7% response rate. If you go to Forest County, and the response rate is only 13.5% as of today. And then if you go to Sullivan County, which is very rural Pennsylvania, and the response rate is only 13.1%, we have some concerns in those areas. However, when we look at the cities, the top eight cities in Pennsylvania, and we see, Philadelphia with the lowest, with a response rate of 36.5% as of today, but then we are moving into Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh is 42%, Erie 43%, Lancaster, that is the eighth largest city, and Lancaster is at 41% response rate. So I believe that we are going to have a successful census, but we need to ensure that we continue doing the outreach in communities across the Commonwealth. When you look at the township, and especially in a township like Lancaster, and you look at the educational level, and you look at the social dynamics of the communities, you're going to see that response rate going higher, and that's why we have to concentrate our efforts in the most vulnerable communities across the state.
Norman, these times obviously are different than what most of us have ever experienced before. I mean, we have people who are relocating to summer homes, maybe living with relatives, and we have college students who are no longer at their colleges and universities but are at home. What about those people? How are they going to be counted?
Well, most of the and that is a great question, and especially because we have been dealing with that question for the past month. College students should be counted in the school that they go to, independently if they return back to California or New York, because they're expected to be back in Pennsylvania as college students next year. So they should be counted in Pennsylvania. When it comes to some of the communities, and, you know, I don't blame them, if they left the Commonwealth to go and spend some time where they feel safer, our recommendation has always been similar to recommendation from the federal government. Those individuals should be counted where they spend most of the time of the year. That is Pennsylvania, where they live 7 months out of the 12, and then 5 months somewhere else. They should be counted in Pennsylvania.
Let's take a phone call from Charles in Camp Hill. Sounds like he has a basic question. Charles, you're on the air.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
I have received four postcards from the government asking me to fill out a form on my computer. I don't have a computer. When will I be mailed my form so I can fill it out?
All right. Thank you very much for your call. This is, a lot of people are being encouraged. Obviously, people are being encouraged to do it online. But if you don't have a computer, what about that, Norman?
Well, starting tomorrow, April 8, according to the federal government, every single individual, and remember, and thank you, Charles, for that phone call, remember that the census, and we have been talking about this for the past few months, the census was scheduled to contact individuals that do not respond to the census at least 4 to 5 times before they send the paper form. Now we are at this stage that anyone that did not respond to the census, between March 13 until now, starting tomorrow, the U.S. Census Bureau will be mailing paper forms to every single household in Pennsylvania that has not responded by now.
Okay. We have an email from a listener. Says, a granddaughter who accidentally threw out all of her census papers that she got in the mail, so now she doesn't have her number. How does she get it?
Well, she still can do it online by phone or by paper without the confirmation number that was sent with the initial form or card, reminder card.
That seems like that could be potential for some fraud, though.
Well, the U.S. Census Bureau, they have been applying a lot of the top cybersecurity, protocols, and they feel 100% confident, and we feel 100% confident that they are going to be able to really look into, the system is going to be able to look into the forms that are submitted to the U.S. government and decide whether that is fraud, it is duplication, or any other case for that matter.
This is a question that could be asked in a normal census year, but now especially, I wonder how you will count the homeless.
What is it again? I'm sorry.
How will you count the homeless during this time?
Well, during this, and the Census Bureau, we began some work with, counting the homeless back in January, and we were able to really do some work with the food bank and the not-for-profit organization, the religious organization, the churches, in identifying the homeless. So we were somehow ahead of the curve back in January. Now the challenge is, because we don't have the opportunity to really connect personally with homeless, that is going to be a top priority once we leave the pandemic and we get into our normal lives. That is going to be a top priority, not only for us at the state, but also a top priority for the nation.
Norman, we only have about 30 seconds left. Advice that you would give our listeners today when it comes to the census?
Well, you know, we are living in a very different world today. It has been a challenge to all of us. We all have been impacted by this pandemic. But there is one thing for sure. The U.S. government is going to continue to be the U.S. government. We are going to be a strong nation independently of the challenges that we are facing. One of the things that are very American is the U.S. Census. The U.S. Census have been in place in 1790, and we are not going to let anything or anyone take us from living that American life that we are used to. So I am recommending everyone, if you are at home, to really fill out the census, because for the next 10 years, you're going to be impacting communities across the Commonwealth.
Norman Bristol-Colon from the Governor's 2020 Complete Count Commission, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
And we have that number for a census card online.